Hi, everyone.
Hi, ghouls.
Welcome to Wicked, Weird, and Grim, your number one podcast for a trip through the history of the odd, haunting, and mystifying. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Ara. Together, we're the Grim Sisters.
It's been a time, you guys.
Yeah, we're...
It's been weird. But not in the wicked, weird, and grim way. Not that way.
Yeah, not in a good way. No. In like a... Not good. In a bad... Do we know English? No.
No.
Okay. Anyways, we have a really, really interesting story today. So it's kind of absolutely mind-boggling. But more than that, I think Caroline and I have found our new favorite duo of role models.
100%. Yes. You'll need to brace yourselves because today we're diving deep into the wicked world of the one and only. Wait.
Of the two and only?
The two and only? The two and only. Freddie and Truce Overstegen. Two sisters who were part of a teenage girl gang that took on the Nazis and came out swinging.
Or, as we fondly like to call them, and the title of this episode, the Nazi-killing girly pops.
Yes. They, like, really took Gaslight, Gatekeep, Girl Boss to the next level all the way back in 1940, whatever.
So, that being said, we're going to set the stage. It is the 1940s in the occupied Netherlands. And it's a time when oppression was absolutely rampant and freedom was a pipe dream.
Freddie and Truce Overstegen were two Dutch sisters. They grew up in Haarlem, Netherlands, and they were raised by a single working class mother.
This is so hard for me. I think it's Trantke. Trantke.
Trantke.
Trantke.
Trantke. Trantke. Okay. Single working class mother, Trantke, who was an avid communist, and she taught her daughters the importance of fighting injustice from infancy.
And just some examples of this are that the girls made dolls for children displaced and affected by the Spanish Civil War when they were younger. And then the girls' mother regularly had the girls sleep in the same bed together to conserve space because they opened up their small flat to a regular rotation of people in need, primarily Jewish refugees fleeing Germany and Amsterdam.
That's really cool. Okay, sorry.
You're fine.
You know me. Always just like losing my place because, you know.
Losing my mind.
Always. During the 1940 Nazi invasion of the Netherlands, the girls subversively handed out pamphlets opposing the Nazi occupation. They even went farther than that and plastered warnings of like over top of propaganda posters searching for workers in Germany.
So and... just, like,
Going. They're going hard.
They're going hard. Yeah. They said no.
They said this is not okay.
It's crazy because they were 12, 13 at the time. So they started young and they, like we said, they went hard.
Yeah.
So when the Nazis invaded, Trantke, the girl's mother, sent away the Jewish refugees in fear that the Nazis would come to ransack their house as known communists. And she was worried that the Nazis would discover the Jewish refugees they were housing. But unfortunately, this meant that many of these refugees were deported and killed, something which is said to have heavily affected the girls and acted as the motivation for their cause later on in life.
After this, the girls really just became more radical. This led to a Dutch resistance group taking notice of them. And the leader of the group, Frans van der Wiel, specifically asked Trantke if Freddie and Truce could join. Freddie was only 14 at the time and Truce was 16.
Which I could barely go outside of the house on my own.
Right?
At that age.
Like, I have this memory, like when it comes to things like knowing about politics and stuff, I have this vivid memory of being like 17 or 18. I had to have been, I couldn't have been 18 yet, but it was the 2008 presidential election and I didn't really know what I believed, didn't really know, you know, anything. And I remember so vividly sitting at lunch one day at school and this girl who was working for the school newspaper, she comes up to our table and she's like, you guys, if you could vote in this election, if you were old enough to vote, who would you vote for? And everyone at my table said John McCain. And I just felt really pressured to like go along with what they said. But then I also knew at home that my parents were very like middle of the road. Like one of them voted for each person, you know? So mm-hmm. they were split and it wasn't like an issue, but I knew with my friends, like it would be an issue if I said Obama. So I just said John McCain, even though I had no idea who I supported. Like I couldn't even vote. Like I, yeah. you know what I mean? So just the idea that at 16, Truce understood this and mm-hmm. even more that Freddie, that to me is, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, especially since I'm sure your friends also just said what their parents
exactly,
said.
Exactly.
Exactly. Just parroting.
And like the reason that I didn't know at that age anyway was partly because my parents were very like, figure it out yourself, you mm-hmm. know, but I was a teenager. And so I mean, because I couldn't vote, I was just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know? And I think too, though, that something we see now, I think, is a lot of teenagers who are a lot more aware than my yeah. generation was.
You know, it is a sort of privilege to be able to not care.
Exactly.
And these girls didn't have the option to not care because it was literally happening all around them. And while a lot of people didn't care during World War II and a lot of Jewish and Roma and other quote unquote radicals or dissenters were affected by that, I just have so much respect that yeah. at 14 and 16, they were able to know their mind so well and like know yeah. what was right.
And like there were so many people who absolutely did think that what was happening was wrong, but they yeah. were afraid. And so they just didn't do anything.
No, yeah.
They just stayed quiet mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of hid from it all, which to be fair, considering how severe it was, I mean, there was literally a war going on. I kind of get yeah. that. But at the same time, the fact that there were people like this is just yeah. really impressive.
Well, it just really makes you respect the people who didn't just hide from it. Yeah. yeah. Anyway, so in response to Franz van der Veel asking Trantka if Freddie and Truce could join this Dutch resistance group, unsurprisingly, all three of them enthusiastically agreed. So the girls went from handing out pamphlets and, you know, combating propaganda to actively luring Nazis into the woods and assassinating them as the only two women in the seven-person rebellion dubbed, quote, the Harlem Council of Resistance, end quote.
Somebody needs to make a movie about these girls immediately.
That's what I said. I was surprised there wasn't one already.
Kind of reminds me of another really cool story of people who fought the Nazis, the Bielski brothers. Mm-hmm. And they led this huge Jewish community into the woods. And it was really cool. It was just, there's a movie about them, though.
Yeah.
The movie's called Defiance. And it's a great movie.
This just makes me feel inadequate.
I know, right? Like, I can
what
never,
have we been doing?
I can never go live in a community out in the woods. I am an indoors girl.
I could live in a community out in the woods, but I have not been, you know, like fighting a war effort.
Exactly. Sure. Well, like, here's the thing. I think that I could maybe live out there for like a couple days, but eventually I want to sit and soak in a bathtub.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. True. And I would be really sad that I couldn't do that.
So pop on down to the local pond.
Seriously.
Take a nice bath. Have some catfish nibble on you.
Yeah.
So
where were we?
Yes.
Okay. Franz had the girls learn the basics of sabotage, rigging railways and bridges with dynamite, blocked travel for the Nazis. The girls also learned how to fire weapons and how to navigate areas populated with Nazi soldiers.
And the girls were able to safely do this because of the fact that they both looked really young. And they were usually riding bicycles as well. That was their main method of transportation at this time. So the Nazis paid them like no attention because they're just like these two girls riding on bikes around occupied Netherlands. And this allowed them to ferry super important paperwork and weapons for the resistance right in front of their noses.
Listen, this movie writes itself.
Okay? It literally does. I can even picture it's going to be like Wes Anderson style, like yes! filming them riding bikes. And then suddenly we're just taken to the woods and they're like executing like, some.
Yeah.
It literally writes itself. Huh. Hollywood, get on this.
Mm-hmm. What's even more crazy is the girls even burned down a Nazi warehouse. Totally undetected. Like, they did not get caught at all. They also escorted small children and refugees to hiding spots and secured false identification for them, which is amazing. They broke Jewish children out of concentration camps, smuggled them out of the country. The girls, more than anything, considered the safety of children and refugees as paramount, always, even if bombs were actively being dropped. I think that is amazing because I think so often, you know, you think of like parents being the ones who were like the children, but like, no, I mean, these yeah. girls are not very removed from being, you know, a 10-year-old or
yeah.
like this is very recent kind of memory for them mm-hmm. being that age and being probably pretty kind of lost in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure it was really scary for them to be doing all of this at that, at like 14 and 16.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was really scary for these little kids.
And I imagine the kids were also much more relieved to have someone closer to their age helping them and relating to them in some way, I guess, instead of an older stranger.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's kind of like, you know, when you, I mean, this is such a trivial example, but, you know, it's like when I was a kid, and I'm sure you had these experiences too, where, you know, you'd have to go to some party with your parents.
Yeah.
And you'd be so relieved when you just saw another kid. You'd be like, yay, there's a kid for me to play with.
Yeah. So the resistance was so much impressed by the girls' abilities and their successful missions that they actually tasked the girls with a much darker task, which was murdering Nazi officers and their Dutch collaborators.
Because no one would see the girls coming or suspect them in the slightest, this job was pretty much perfect for them. Freddie later described it as a necessary evil.
And Freddie and Truce began this darker task by acting as bait, slowly building up to eliminating their own targets. The girls were said to have one sister be a lookout while another flirted with Nazi targets, enticing them to go for a walk in the woods, where a resistance member would be waiting to execute the Nazi. Freddie and Truce eliminated many high-ranking SS officers in this way.
Again, movie writes itself.
It does.
Freddie called the eliminating of their own targets, quote, liquidations, which, yes, say that.
Girl boss.
That. Truly, truly. It's like the gaslight gatekeep girl boss.
Yeah.
Sometimes the girls would ride a bicycle with Truce pedaling and Freddie shooting from the back. They would also follow officers home to ambush them. And remember, they were still teenagers. Like, this is all teenage girl stuff, okay?
I know this isn't how they described it, but I'm just imagining like Freddie riding in the basket of a bike, just like just with a machine gun in her hand, just taking Nazis out.
Just riding around town, shooting Nazis.
This is what I needed as a teenage girl, like the Barbie movie. And I need this.
Yes. Yes.
Come on, Hollywood.
Okay. Better yet, Barbie playing one of the girls, because Barbie is everything.
That's true.
And he's just Ken. So
Barbie. So these girls were not your average teenagers, obviously, as they were infiltrating Nazi meetings, delivering top secret messages, and killing these enemy soldiers. So really picture Freddie and Truce marching into those meetings like they owned the place, and they used their knack for gaining the Nazis' trust, and then bam, out came their hidden weapons.
It's like a teenage Avengers squad taking on the Nazis. Spies, saboteurs, and warriors all rolled into one.
So while the girls knew the work they did was essential and necessary, of course, this was still a huge emotional and mental task for them. It was a lot of turmoil, a lot of grief, a lot of battling with all these dark parts of their job being killing people. But despite this, the girls only ever refused a single mission. And this goes back to earlier when they prioritized children. And the mission they refused was a mission to kidnap the children of senior Nazi officer Arthur Seyss Inquart to hold for ransom exchange for imprisoned Dutch radicals. The girls, of course, worried for the well-being of the children. They were worried the children would be hurt in this, and so they declined.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think something really important, too, is there was such a thing in Nazi Germany, pretty typical for, like, fascist society, this weird obsession with, like, breeding and having children, and lots of children, like a brood of children.
Yeah.
But like those children that were had, they're victims. Like I mean, they're just children, and it's not their fault that they were being indoctrinated. And their parents were still, you know, providing for them and like loving them.
Yeah.
And they just didn't understand. I mean, they didn't know anything different. So I think it's really important that these girls were able to understand that those kids are not part of this.
Yeah. You
know, that
they their casualty doesn't mean any less than anyone else.
They're still children and they're still people. And there are Nazis at the end of the war who believed all of this stuff so radically that they murdered their own children and then themselves in order to prevent their children growing up in like a non-Nazi world.
Yeah.
And that's just, I don't know, that's so scary and sad.
Can't imagine the trauma that children who did survive. Yeah. Because there's so many like Nazi after school student programs.
Yeah.
I forgot what they're called.
Hitler Youth.
Yeah. That's terrifying.
Absolutely.
That's so terrifying.
So crazy. And like another thing too is like in some countries that the Nazis invaded, they would start these programs to have Nazi men basically have children with the local women.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I want to say it's Agnetha from ABBA. Band ABBA. She found out later in her life that her dad was one of those Nazis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so she, her whole life had kind of wondered about her dad, like, who's my dad? And then she finds out that he is actually this, you know, pretty awful person. And so even, you know, decades and decades after this, that still had a really tremendous impact on her.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, she's not alone in making one of those discoveries. I'm sure there are people now making those discoveries about grandparents, you know? So the stuff has an impact long after it actually happened.
It's a dark legacy.
Yeah. So in 1943, the girls were joined by Yenikche Johanna, aka Hanny Shaft, a 22-year-old former law student. And these three women soon became inseparable as a strategically coordinated unit for sabotage missions.
So the girls worked with Hanny for the next 2 years, targeting officers and eluding identification. The girls also managed to find moments of joy and laughter amidst all the chaos of their jobs. They were just teenage girls, so of course this was a big part of who they were. They played pranks on the Nazis, they danced to swing music, and they even fell in love.
Unfortunately, Schaff's distinctive red hair was her undoing. Freddie and Truce were worried in April 1945 when Hanny had failed to report back after an assignment. And they soon learned that Hanny had been grabbed at a checkpoint by an officer that had seen the red roots of her hair, despite Hanny having dyed her hair black to avoid detection.
Unfortunately, the girls not being able to find Hanny because she had been grabbed at that checkpoint meant her eventual execution on April 17th of 1945. But she did not go out without a bang. Honestly, all of these women, when you see what they do, you can't be surprised. The lore has it that she taunted her executioner after he failed to kill her on his first attempt. And she said, quote, "I'm a better shot," end quote.
She probably was too.
Reportedly.
So Freddie and Truce really grieved the loss of their friend. And, you know, all of this really was a struggle for them when they went back to civilian life after the war.
In trying to process the trauma of the war, Freddie ended up getting married and having children. And Truce channeled her grief into artwork through sculpting memorials to Hanny and even writing a memoir.
The sisters later opened the National Hanny Shaft Foundation in 1996. Freddie and Truce were awarded the Mobilization War Cross in 2014 by Prime Minister Mark Rutte for their service during the war. This was a long time coming, and the girls had not been honored for their role serving in the war. But Freddie believed it may have been because the anti-Soviet Dutch government resented her family's communist connections.
Yeah, it's actually said that Freddie repeatedly mentioned that the Dutch government didn't like her because she had been part of a communist after-school group for girls or something. It was just really funny.
Oh, the Cold War. Strange, strange times, truly.
It's like they fought for your country all through World War II, but you're like, no.
Yeah.
They're still horrible people. Truce ended up passing away at the age of 92 in 2016, and Freddie followed after her in 2018 at age 93, one day short of her 94th birthday.
I feel like people like them, they always end up living to be like 90.
Yeah. Well, you have to, because it's like, you almost got killed so many times in your youth.
The Nazis couldn't kill you. No, like, you are going to die of old age. You're just going to chill and die when you're ready. Like,
nothing can kill you. Yeah.
It is unknown how many Nazis in total the girls killed, as both women were reluctant to, you know, really talk about that. And Freddie actually always would say when someone asked her that, quote, "One should not ask a soldier any of that." And I agree with that. It's like a really offensive question, I'm sure. Yeah,
she was a soldier, you know, through and through. They both were. So Freddie and Truce Overstegen were a part of this teenage girl gang along with Hanny Shaft that was unprecedented. Mm-hmm. They were war heroes that valiantly served their country in World War II. And honestly, they probably saved so many women and children, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Refugees all along the way. So,
they probably don't even really know how many people they saved.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, kind of common because, I mean, at this point, you have to count that it's not just the people you saved in the moment, but like their ancestors, right?
Yeah.
So like all, or their descendants, I mean. So like all of the people, the, you know, children and grandchildren that they've had now.
And what's sad is people are asking them, you know, how many Nazis did you kill? That's not what they should be asking.
No, they should be saying, how many people did you save from terrible, horrible, despicable people?
Yep. So we heard about them. I sent a link to Caroline and I was like, we have to talk about them because they are role models.
Months.
Yeah.
Because we've been trying to organize ourselves here.
So that's the story of Freddie and Truce. And honestly, I'm going to try to model myself after them every day, going to try to take a stand and not cower before the things I believe in and also be like really badass while doing it. So.
I don't know if I have it in me to be as cool as them, but I definitely want to be as dedicated to what I believe as they were.
Yeah.
I don't think it would look like a movie though.
No. But they do need to make this a movie.
They really do.
Like, I don't know who needs to film it.
No.
I don't know who needs to be like act in it, but
oh yeah.
You know, this needs to be a movie. So someone please get on
this.
Please
get on it, please.
I'm sure we have hundreds of really influential Hollywood people listening right now.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So
definitely.
we're something else.
Yep.
So with that, we'll wrap up. As per usual, you can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'd especially love it if you gave us a 5-star on Spotify or a 5-star on iTunes podcasts.
We are on all the other social medias, Instagram. Instagram is the main one. Mm-hmm. We kind of forget about the other one sometimes. Yeah.
We're trying.
Yeah.
Instagram and Facebook are what we do
really
with.
Yeah, really the ones. Yeah, so we're on all the social medias. We are Wicked, Weird, and Grandma on all of them, except for one.
Except for Twitter, which is just Wicked, Weird, Grim.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's no and in that one.
We're also on Patreon. We'd love if you would subscribe and help us with the podcast there. And then also, Anchor has moved to Spotify for podcasters.
Interesting.
So
I did not know that.
You can still find a lot of the same stuff. We'll still be putting out questions, that kind of thing. It's just been bought by Spotify, I believe.
Yeah.
With that, you will hear us next Wicked Weird Wednesday with the Grimm Sisters. Bye, guys.
Bye. I didn't wave that time. Everybody, Ara just dropped her mic. It fell from the tables to the floor.
The last time it happened. Oh, no. Okay. Hope that didn't scare you guys. Just kidding. It probably won't be left in.